Good day, eh?
Good day.
Good day. Welcome to another Ford Side Chat, a podcast about blacksmithing, bladesmithing, and everything in between, with the focus on talent in the great white north.
The great white north. He's talking about Canada, eh? The great. And today on the podcast, we've got another gentleman coming south of the border. We're going way south. We're going to, well, not way south. I mean, mid-south. We're going to New Mexico. We're talking to Jesus Marquez. You might know him as Mexishop on Instagram. If you don't, go check the guy out ASAP. Yeah. You will be blown away by what's this. The number one post you'll probably see as soon as you go on there. Reward for advice, $10,000. Like, oh my God, dude, that's insanity. That is so cool. So this guy's a tool collector. He's been collecting for about 10 years now. Does it for the love of bench vices, man. I can't say enough about that because I got a vice for vices myself. He has been dabbling a little bit in the blacksmithing world as well. We'll hear more about that as we chat forward here. But welcome to the show, Zeus. How are you doing, bud?
Good. How are you guys? Thank you for the invite.
Oh, thanks for joining us. Doing good.
Thank you.
Happy to be here. So I'm Jesus Marquez. I'm originally from Juarez, Mexico, and I've been living here in New Mexico for the past 23 years now.
Right on.
Nice. Very cool.
What got you into vices? Why is vices your vice?
So I'd always done construction, right? We immigrated from Juarez to the U.S. Yeah. And my grandpa, when we lived in Juarez, had a wood framer, and he had a bunch of old tools and rusty iron just sitting in the yard. So I would love to collect all the bolts and nuts and screws and put them in yards. And so I think I picked it up from him a little bit. He had a very old bench vise. I remember I used to play around with in his shop back in Juarez. And it wasn't, you know, nothing rare. It was probably a Chinese vise. I don't remember if I remember correctly. It was just a little vise that he had in the shop. And when I came to the U.S., I started doing framework myself. Started collecting my iron at the house too, bringing all those, you know, the rusty old scrap metal pieces that nobody wants. Oh, you know, I might have a use for them. So I was always working by myself, and I said, hey, I need a nice handy vise that I could use. So I was on my way home, and I saw this bench vise sitting in a back porch just rusting away. And I decided to stop one day and knock on the door and ask the owner if they'd be interested in selling it. Well, it turns out it was a pretty rare vise. Once I cleaned it, I put it up on Pinterest, you know, just because I liked the way it came out. And I got a lot of requests for that vise. And I started reading on vises, and I got more into it. I got a second vise, and, you know, it's all history from there. One of my biggest scores was when I first started collecting vices, a $3,500 vice. I picked it up for $80 here locally for scrap. And I put it up in one of the vice groups, and I got a lot of attention, a lot of messages for that vice. And, you know, it just kind of seemed like vices come to me all the time.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, as we're talking to you, just behind you, you've got a rack. I'm seeing about, at least a dozen vices for sure right there. Two shelves. There's, six on each shelf, and each one is, well, how big are those vices? Those got to be close to 80 pounds each, eh?
Yeah, well, I think there's about 40 vices in this shelf behind me.
I can only see two shelves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I need to do a video tour of my shop because I do have a close to 400 vices now.
Oh, wow.
So I try to be more selective nowadays with what I buy. That's why you guys saw that post of the 10-inch mogul vice. And people ask me if I'm serious, if I'm really offering $10,000 for that vice. And, you know, I am pretty serious. If I find this vice, if I get it, if somebody gets it to me, I'm going to give them $10,000 for this vice.
Wow, right. Dude.
It's a 460 to 480-pound vice. We don't know for sure. But it's a big
box. How many of those do you think exist in the United States right now?
There's only one known out there, and the guy who has it has no social media. He's just a ghost. Nobody knows. A collector took pictures of it when they found it, and he posted them online. That's the picture that I used for my wanted sign. But that's the only bison known out there, and he doesn't care to sell it. And I understand, but my goal is to maybe, get to him someday and maybe make him, a sweet offer for it. Maybe I can drive wherever it is in the United States and pick it up myself.
There you go.
There's a saying out there that nothing is ever owned. It's simply held on to temporarily until the next person gets it, right?
Yep, exactly.
How many? Sorry, go ahead.
And the reason why I'm going all out on
Pep
this.
Pep Gomez was talking about that.
It's because.
Yeah.
Who is this?
Jose Gomez. You might know Jose. He's not. He's not far from you, eh?
Yeah.
No. So the reason why I'm after this bison now is because I think I have a pretty complete collection now. I have every style of the railroad bystands, that we know of. The 8-inch bices, which are the 300-pound bices, the big ones. I pretty much have one of each maker. And then the 9-inch bices, which 9-inch bices are super rare. I mean, these bices go, from $5,000 and up each.
No.
And I own four of them now. Some of the rarest bices that I have in my collection. So I'm getting to that point where I don't want any more bices. I just want the really hard to get bices now.
I
have a vice that I don't think you have in your collection. I'm just gonna put that out there.
Oh, really? Which one's that one? Yeah.
It's a Princess Auto 6-inch vice with a swivel. It's a sweet vice.
What the fuck, dude?
I love to see that one.
Oh my god, not a Princess Auto vice.
Princess Auto is the Canadian version of Harbor Freight.
Harbor Freight, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah. That's probably why I don't own one.
Exactly. Yeah, fucking guy. Sometimes, Nick, I don't know about you, but jeez.
I am a special individual. I really am.
Yeah. No, and I mean, there's a lot of vices out there still that, that I would like to have, but it's just one of those things where I'm trying to get rid of a few now. I'm currently looking for a big shop now. Something bigger, because of course my house is completely full. The shop and the yard, everything's completely full.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. At this point, now that you're kind of consolidating your collection, I could kind of getting the hint that that's where you're at with things. You've probably moved a lot of your collection. How many vices do you think have gone through your hands now at this point?
Oof. I would say a good 500 of them.
Holy smokes, buddy. That's awesome.
Yeah, I have the majority of them sitting in my house. And I only let a few of them go, but I did a bunch of trading and stuff. But I would say 500 for sure.
Yeah. You're friends with Alex Andrew, right? That's his name from Blacksmith Tools?
Andrew Alexander, yes. He's a great guy. He used to be the top collector for bench vices.
And now you are?
And now you are. I am.
Yeah, buddy. Amazing.
And you know what? I do got to thank him because he helped me a lot with my journey here with vices.
Yeah.
Three of the 9-inch vices that I owned, I got from Andrew. He's a great guy. Oh, I'd love to go visit him. He's about 11-hour drive from me.
Nice. And, where is he located?
In Dallas, Texas.
Okay, nice, nice. That's a guy that we need to interview one of these days, man. I'd love to get him on the show for sure.
He'll do it for sure. He's a great guy.
You know what? Actually, I watched one of his videos when I had to pour Babbitt into my power hammer.
So no way.
It's kind of nice. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it gave some good information there. One of his YouTube videos.
You should see his, he has three huge shops, warehouses, and they're just full of ambles. He has a lot of ambles. That's mostly he's well known for his Sambo collection. And
yeah.
I mean, he used to be, like I said, he used to be the top bench vice collector, but you know, he sold a lot of his stuff too. And it took me years to get the top vices from him. I'm not gonna lie, but like he's told me, you know, you earned that place, so I think they deserve to go to you. So we, you know, we're good friends. We talk a lot. So he's been to my house a few times.
So is this your full time gig now? Is, you know, buying, selling, trading?
No. Bench vices is it's just a hobby.
That's just a hobby.
Wow. Yeah, no. I mean, even though I spend a lot of time on vices all day, because every, you know, since I wake up, I get notifications from all over the place. Instagram, just text messages, Messenger from guys say, hey, are you interested in this vice? Or can you tell me what this vice is worth? And, you know, eBay, Etsy, all the notifications from all over the place. But I do real estate full time, commercial and residential. Oh. I do have I do restaurants too. I own a couple of restaurants. I also do investments. Wow. So I do stock market, 401ks, Roth IRAs. I do daycare, early child education. So I do have a couple of contracts with the state of New Mexico for daycares exclusively for state employees.
What the heck? Okay, how did you get into doing all this stuff, dude? Where did this start?
And I became a U.S. citizen 4 years ago.
Wow! Good for you, dude. That's awesome.
You are the American dream. Like, that is the American dream. You came to the country 27 years ago doing construction.
Well, thank you.
Like, holy crap.
And I'd like to point out that I have no high school education and no GED either.
Yeah, this, you know what? This right here, like, I know I don't like to talk about politics, right? Yeah. Fuck those motherfuckers. That's awesome.
At least 30 of my full-time employees have master degrees and bachelor's.
What? Wow. You know what? Amen. Cheers to that.
It's really like I mentioned earlier, before we started here, I come from Juarez, and Juarez is known to be the most dangerous place in the world. So I come from where there's almost no water, resources, there's corruption. It's bad to live out there, you know. And I get here at 12 years old from Juarez to the United States, and all of a sudden, I'm a millionaire just for living here, for having all the resources. For having sidewalks, for not having potholes on the street, you know, I can't believe that I'm actually here. And because for us, it's just it's a dream being here. So I go to middle school. I graduated from middle school, and I said, "Hey, I think I pretty much learned the language enough so I could, you know, go out and do something of myself." And I chose not to go to high school. I mean, it wasn't just because I didn't want to go to high school. I had to work for myself. You know, I was out there in the streets. I was hanging around with the wrong people. And I started talking to my uncle down in Juarez again. And he sends me a book called Total Money Makeover from Dave Ramsey. And I started reading that book. It took me a whole year to read that book. And everything just started clicking for me. After that, I pick up the book again. I read the whole book in a week, and then I just went to the next book.
What's the name of that book again?
Called The Total Money Makeover from Dave Ramsey.
You've spiked this man's curiosity, to say the least.
Oh, and you know what? I like to tell everyone that I know, because everybody's curious. I'm 32 years old. I tell everybody, because everybody, you know, I have a few houses, they're paid for, a few rentals, commercial real estate that I own, and I'm 100% owner. There's no partnerships. There's none of that.
Holy smokes.
And it all started from that one book, and from being in the United States, really, I had no, of course, you know, you hear about people going to college here, graduating, all that nice stuff. But yeah, I just started early, and it was hard, and I think that's what got me up here, because I had no parents, no family to help me, or because that makes you comfortable, right? I believe that the harder you get it, the stronger you get. So,
son of a gun. I don't like to hear that, man. I don't like to hear that. You know why? My life is too, because my life has become too comfortable, and I know that's the bloody problem of why I'm not pushing myself. Yeah, exactly.
That's most people's problem, and it's not their fault. You know, I didn't choose to have a hard life, but I would live the same life with drugs, being homeless, being hungry, all over again if I knew it was gonna give me the same results. So when I'm out there looking for a $10,000 bench buys, you know, people are like, "You're just dumb." I said, "Well, no, that's what I like. Most people drink or do cocaine or have fast cars. You know, that's what I like. That's where I want to put my money in, because that's what motivates me right now. You know, all this old iron stuff. Fuck yeah, I do have some nice cars too, but you know, that's what I like."
One of my favorite tools that I've seen you pick up recently is the small cranes, the old school cranes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I have six of them, I think, now.
Where the heck do those things come from, dude?
Well, I get them from all over the place. One of them came from New York, the other one from Philadelphia, the other one from Kentucky.
What were they originally used for?
So what the paper ads show, in the 1800s, they were used for the Model Ts, the cars Model Ts. So they were almost considered like a cherry picker nowadays.
Yeah.
They were used in machine shops, you know, just pretty much in rail yards. I seen pictures of them in rail yards. So that was the first cherry pickers back then. So I seen them sold for upwards of $15,000 each.
Holy smokes, so, man.
The first time, let me tell you a story. The first time I saw one was on Andrew Alexander's YouTube video. And I said, "Oh, I got to get me one of those." Yeah. I traded my first one for an 8-inch vice that I still regret. Big vices, but I had to, because I needed to have one. And then after that, you know, I posted it and everybody's like, "Hey, I see one here. You want it? You're interested?" So, you know, as soon as I post something, everything goes up in price. And then everybody wants to sell me one. So I figure that's the best way to get that mogul in my hands.
Yeah.
Post it before I have it.
Man, I've been going through vices and anvils, whatnot, blacksmithing tools for, I don't know, 7 years now. They've been going through my hands. I've traded and picked up and got rid of a bunch of stuff. And there's a few that I definitely regret getting rid of. An 8-inch vice is now one of the things I'm really regretting getting rid of. I should have kept it, even though I've got 3 of them in the shop right now.
Well, 8-inch vices.
I used to have four of them. I had a duplicate of it, and I was like, I don't need 2 of these. And I had a friend that really wanted it, and I actually sold it to him for the $80 that I bought it for.
Oh my god!
Yeah, dude, it had okay. So the box was cracked on it, like the very tail end of the box was cracked pretty good. The slide. Yes. So he had to, you know, cut the crack open and braise it so that it was a usable vise. Yeah. But he did that, and it's still
vise. Then
it was a reed.
A reed. Okay, it's hard to find a reed that's broken.
The guy that sold it to me thought that it was seized, and in order to try to unseize it, he took a sledgehammer to the back end of it.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Yeah. It was a perfectly good vice half an hour before I bought it, and he thought he could get it unseized and charge me like an extra $100 for it by getting it unseized. And it's like, oh, dude, I would have given you an extra $100 had you not cracked it.
Yeah, I'm actually editing a video right now on how to unseize a vice, because I get that question asked at least twice a month, and because it's a common issue with vices, because they're sitting out there just rusting. So I'm making a video on a Wilton 800.
Lay it down on me. How do you do it, dude?
Well, I use a lot of heat. You got to use a lot of heat and then just patience, my brother. Patience. Okay.
Yeah, see, I was thinking maybe soaking it in a bucket of vinegar for a while to try to get rid of some of the rust. And then after doing vinegar, rinse it off and then try.
Evaporust.
Have you done the evaporust?
I've done it, but you gotta leave it in there for days.
Yeah.
But if you put just a little, I unstuck one with a crane, one of those antique cranes that I have. You guys will see the video. I'll upload it here soon. But mostly with heat, he will do the trick.
Okay. Well, there's a good chance you'll get the video before we get the episode out here, because I still have a couple episodes behind us that we need to get out. What was the last guy that we just interviewed there?
That was with Nick Verbrave, my friend.
Chris Cash. Didn't you do that one with me? No, that was with Nick. Chris Cash from Mount Phillip Metalworks. I just interviewed him the other day. And then I did Matthew Harris as well, actually, just the other day. So I've got like three episodes that I got to get out still. I had to get a new computer. My computer's so old and out of date, it won't let me work on it anymore. So
I have the MacBook Pro, but I have to have it because otherwise, so you know, I have a friend, he's all about tech guy, and he's like, I used to have an Android phone. He's like, you gotta get rid of that, you gotta change your computer. So he's getting me updated with all the tech stuff, so I have to listen to him.
it's a good idea to stay up to date on that stuff if you're in business. Oh, and
it's made my life so much easier.
Right.
It's great.
So where did you kind of figure out where the value of a lot of this stuff goes? Is there quite a few other people that are collecting these vices that you guys kind of like have a collective group that decides, or?
Yeah. So there's a few Facebook groups, and that's mostly where I'm at. But the collectors, I mean, everybody keeps telling me that I'm controlling the market now. So I put up something up there, you know, like I almost controlling the market. But there is a few groups, but there's also private groups where collectors, we just trade stuff or we sell stuff to each other, and once, you know, those good auctions pop out. So that pretty much, that's us putting the price on a vice that we really want. So, you know, like I was talking about that 10-inch mogul that I'm offering $10,000. If there's a collector out there that wants it more than I do, of course he's going to pay more for it. And then I'm screwed. I got to bring in more cash too to the table. You know what I mean? So I have a few vices that I paid over $10,000 for. I have a Bugatti vice, you know, from factory, from the Bugatti factory.
Okay, I saw that guy.
I don't know if you guys saw the Jesse James Bugatti vice. He paid $22,000 for his.
Holy shit, buddy!
And he uses his vice. You know, I don't touch mine. I don't use it at all. But he uses his for his to make his guns. So, you know, there's a market for it. Like, let me show you. Like this little guy here, the Parker Bears. You know, this is cast iron. The last one sold for like $700 now. I have about 45 of them. So that's like $20,000 in just bears.
What the fuck? That's so insane.
It just depends really on how the market's doing. Just like the stock market, you know, some days stuff go for high and some days you just get it for cheap.
I can't help but notice the cabinet that you have behind you too. That looks like it's like an old engineer's style cabinet or something like that.
Well, you're talking about the one with the wood drawers?
It looks like it's got,
So that one, Jeremy Smith on YouTube. If you guys ever see, you know, you guys should check him out. He made that cabinet with the belt grinder. It took him 2 years to design that belt grinder. I think that video has over 2 million views now.
Oh, wow.
Holy cow.
And so he was in Phoenix. He was in Arizona. I can't remember the name of the town. And he got a job offer in New York. So he posted once on his Instagram that he was going to be moving. So, of course, I jumped on that, on his tools. I said, hey, man, I'll take a drive down there and I'll pick up everything that you want to sell. He's like, come on over, bring a truck and bring a trailer. So, you know, I drove over there and I picked up his welding table that has, you know, it's a lot of views on that welding table too. It's right up there too. But the belt grinder I got from him, that cabinet, and a round welding table with a 6-inch Wilton bullet vise on it.
Ooh, nice.
And I mostly wanted it just because he made them. You know, yeah. So I could have bought I already had a 2x72 belt grinder. See, I already had one, but I wanted his. The way he designed it and he made it, it was just an amazing build.
You know, I feel like we started this conversation off all wrong, Nick. Like, yeah. Right from the get-go, that we should have started this conversation off with the, oh, tell me about your tool. I mean, tools. This episode is all tool cougar, bud. She's all over this.
It is all about the tool.
You're having a nice conversation, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is amazing, dude. Absolutely love it. What are you running for the other 2x72 that you have?
Excuse me?
You said you have two 2x72s?
Yeah. So one of them's a Baldur or a Wilson with a Baldur motor.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so that was the one I had already. And then the one I picked up from him. If you look him up, his name is Jeremy Smith. You guys will see that video. It's an amazing belt grinder. Yeah. And I have a couple of other Baldur, what would you call them? Bench grinders? Or, yeah. The big ones with the round wheels.
Yep, yep, yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the big railroad style ones?
Almost, yep.
Yeah, exactly. I picked one of those up. Freaking the case on one side of it is cracked off, so it's missing the tool rest part of the case, unfortunately. Oh, yeah. But I got it for $50, dude.
Oh, man.
It's probably maybe worth $50 because the motor was blowing on it and the guy cut open the case on the back side of it, pulled all the guts out for the motor, and then installed a motor off of a plate on the back side of it and ran a belt through the hole that he cut on the back side of the, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now it's ran by an external motor with a belt through a hole in the case.
Yeah,
and Frankenstein to say the least, but it works great, dude. I absolutely love the thing.
Guys, can I please take like 2 minute break? I got a phone call real quick.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Sure. Oh, good.
Yeah. Well, all good.
One of the buildings, and I had to answer a couple questions.
That's okay. We were just talking about you. We were just talking about you. It's all good.
Talking about how amazing. Yeah. Well, I mean, how amazing is it that you are where you are in life, dude? I mean, like, and that's by all means, you had to answer a business call.
Yeah.
That's business calls, bro.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
No, I mean, it wasn't, you know, once people tell their stories, I'm always interested because, like everybody thinks that most people that I meet nowadays that don't know me from my past, they're like, oh, well, you probably had it easy, you know? And it's never easy. Yeah. To have a nice vice collection, you know, takes years and calls and text messages and be on it to complete that collection. I don't know if you guys ever seen my original vice displays from stores that I own, and they're completely full with the right vices on the numbered.
Yeah.
People think that I just found that sitting in a store with all the vices on there and I took it home. It took me years to complete one set, you know, searching for it, reaching out to people, just keeping an eye out there, you know, and making offers and bothering people. It's really a lot of work.
Do you have another half, and what do they think of your collection obsession?
Oh, well, you know, most people that, like, I'm really private with my collection. My Facebook's private, so a lot of the people that are around me don't have a clue what I do for hobby. So I only post.
Are you married? Are you married? Is that what I meant? But, like, yeah. So married? What does your wife think about your collection?
Oh,
yeah.
My other half. Okay, I see what you're saying now.
Yeah.
You know, your better half, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, she don't mind. She's you know, she's like, I told her about I'm offering $10,000 for the mogul. She's like, well, I hope you don't pay more than that. But if you do, you know, good luck. Good luck finding it. So she supports everything that I do, of course.
She's all in. That's really cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
how could you not be, dude? Look at what the guy's pulling off. How could you not be all in on that?
And that's true. Once, you know, like, we've been together for 15 years now. You know, my first child was when we were 18. And I told her, I want kids now. And she's like, don't you want to wait? I said, if you want to wait, I'm not going to wait. And she's like, no, I'll give you all the kids you want.
So, there you go.
Two kids now, and you know, I'm trying to have two more soon, hopefully.
No way. Good for you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks.
Wow.
Beautiful.
A couple more vice collectors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're showing them the ways in the shop. How old are they now?
My boy is 14, and my daughter's 11.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you get them out in the shop at all, or?
Oh yeah. My son, like I take him to the construction sites, and like he helps the guys. He works there now, especially now that he's off school. He's, you know, and well, my daughter's not really interested in, you know, in the tools, but my son is. He knows how to weld.
Yeah,
knows how to fish, all that good stuff. Yeah,
it's awesome. Yeah,
he goes with me to the blacksmith classes and all that stuff.
Yeah, so you were saying before that your good friend is president of the Blacksmith Association in your area, right?
He's Chase Robo. Yeah, he used to be my neighbor across the street, but he just recently moved. He's still like about 10 minutes from me, but we talk often. He's a great guy.
Wow.
So and he's a blacksmith full time.
Oh, cool. Nice. How often are they? Oh, okay. Yeah. Those farriers are another. They're a class of their own, man. They're something else.
Yeah.
Man.
How often do they
move steel?
Yeah. How often do they get together?
Once a month.
And do you tend to go to each get together?
Not all of them, but I try. And you know, it's not like if I feel like going over to his shop, he'll be there working, doing something. So I go over there and have a couple of beers with him and stuff.
Nice. And you got a forge of your own now?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a cold forge that I got from him. One of those, what's up? Can't think of the brand right now, but it's one of the known name brands out there for the cold forges.
Like a big table. Champion.
Yep.
Yeah.
Big table.
Yeah, and lower. Yeah, the big one. And then I have a propane forge too that I use.
Oh, there you go.
If
you ever start collecting forges, just let me know. I've got a nice champion.
You know what? I don't know if you guys seen my story, but I really love to grill in charcoal. Give me one of those champion grill forges, the ones that were made to grill.
I didn't know.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that it existed.
You guys got to see them. Those are nice. And I know where one is, but I haven't, you know, started the negotiation. But so Champion made a couple of barbecue grills.
Crazy.
Huh. Yep, and they have them lower and everything. Yeah.
Interesting. That's fucking cool. Yeah, that would be so awesome, dude.
I'm going to have to take that blower and make it into a Champion grill now. Like, why not?
Yeah,
exactly.
Do it.
I just cooked up some sausages on charcoal at the last hammering, man. Those are fuck, it's so good, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I try to smoke the meat with the charcoal. That's instead of just cooking it, I try to smoke it there, and it's it's delicious.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that charcoal adds such a good flavor, man.
Oh, well, let me tell you a quick story. I was there's a big chain of restaurants, not fancy restaurants, but they're up there. They're called Elephant Bar and Restaurant. I don't know if you have them up there in Canada.
Don't think so.
And no. I was the line manager there when I was 16 years old, but I got immigration called on me, so I had to leave. But I used to love cooking. I my dad was a chef. He went to culinary school in Mexico, and he was a well-known chef. And so I think I picked up a lot from him.
Yeah, wow, that's cool. Is he still around, or?
You know what? I haven't seen him in like probably 15 years. So,
oh, wow.
I don't know. Yeah, we Mexicans are something else, man.
You still do a lot of cooking nowadays, or?
For me?
Yeah.
I mean, I cook maybe, you know, twice or three times a week. But on the barbecue or the.
Yeah.
Are you interested in the blacksmithing side of things in order to learn how to make your own knives, or are you more interested in it for the artistic aspects?
All knives.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Being a cook.
I love the art that the blacksmith guys do. I mean, I do have a little wall with a bunch of art that I received or, you know, I gifted from other blacksmithing tools that guys. Yeah. But I just prefer knives.
Cool.
There you go.
Yeah. What about leg vices and machinist vices? You collecting those too?
Leg vices, I only have a handful of them, and I only have like the 8-inch, 200-pound vices.
That's all I got. Nothing special.
I don't have a big collection of them. And they do pop out a lot, but I'm mostly into the bench vices.
Yeah.
Can you believe this guy, Lando? Can you believe this guy? Really?
Right?
Can you?
Who does only that? Eh? I'm only into bench vices. Yeah. I've got a 6-inch leg vise that I picked up that's close to 200 pounds, and I thought that was an amazing thing. And then I find out that there's these leg vices out there that are, you know, 8-inch, 10-inch Europe has some crazy big leg vices, dude. That's Europe just like
most of the beautiful vices, the leg vices, everything.
Yeah. What about bench vices? Are they holding on to a bunch of bench vices that you've never managed to get your hands on because it's Europe and it doesn't come here, or?
No, they don't make them as big as American vices are made, you know. But I do have a couple of European vices. I have a few German vices. German makes, you know, German tools are great quality tools.
Yeah,
yeah.
I do have one of those super German vices, the one like the one the Fireball Tools made. I don't know if you've seen that red one, the big one.
Yeah.
So yeah, the German super German vice that looks exactly like that one.
Oh, interesting. Cool.
And you know what? Mr. Bernhardt, he's a well-known blacksmith in Germany. He brought that vice for me, and he came here to my house. He was a full-time blacksmith all his life. He's done some amazing blacksmith work. Have you guys heard of him, Mr. Bernhardt?
I've definitely seen the name before, yeah.
He retired, and he sold a bunch of his tools, and I got a couple of his best vices that he had, and he gave me a board full with horseshoeing pieces of art that he made over the years.
Huh.
And I have that in my shop.
That's awesome, dude. Lucky you, man. This is a prime example of good people have good things that come back to them, right? You do good things and you'll live a good life type thing. I mean, it's doesn't go to say that somebody's not going to try to rob you or something like that. You can't prevent what other people are going to try to do to you, but if you emulate a good life, chances are you're gonna have good people in your surround you in your life.
Exactly. I agree, you know. And I think what helped me the most was to have that bad life or early age. You know, that's where I picked up most of people skills, because I did a lot of construction with grown up guys that, you know, they were just those alpha macho Mexican guys, you know, and they used to pick on me and I used to hate it, but now I love it. You know, it's just one of those things that I learned early, and how to treat people right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's it's an interesting side to that whole tough love kind of thing or whatever. And I know my father tried to pull that on me too, my stepdad tried to pull it off of me. And I hated his guts when I was a teenager and I couldn't stand it. And, you know, I led a little bit of a life of depression because of it or whatever there in my earlier years. But I look back on it now and, well, I mean, anything shapes you to who you are nowadays or whatever. And I have to respect the fact that that is what shaped me to be who I am today. Who knows what I'd be outside of that or whatever. But there's something to be said for a little bit of that tough love. I think it's a little bit of it is definitely good for you type thing. A little bit too much of it, maybe not. But
it's only good when it's genuinely masculine, when it's really masculine thing. Because I give my son the tough love all the time. I mean, he's a very tough guy. And because, you know, life was tough with me. And I learned that from, like I said, with genuinely tough guys. you know, and I received that with some guys that weren't really tough. And that's where it kind of gets all those feelings mixed. Because why is this guy being a dick to me, you know? But he's really not that way. But with theirs, when you meet people that are generally masculine, like instead of you feeling like they're just being a dick to you, you could feel the love from them. That's the only way they can love. And, you know, that's what I teach my son. So I could see where you're coming off from your stepdad. Maybe it wasn't genuinely masculine, you know?
No, there's definitely a side of that for sure. Yeah. A little hint of it, just a tad. Sprinkled it on there. It was a bay salt, eh?
Salt bay?
Yeah, I said it wrong. Fuck me.
Go figure. How about you, Nick?
Well, actually, it's kind of funny because we had a little bit of a story from yesterday.
Oh, shit,
carried over today. Yeah, and it kind of goes along the same lines, I guess. I don't know. I kind of took last week off from the shop. My wife kind of told me stay home, so I did. my two employees were there working, and I get back on Monday, and I didn't really notice in the one washroom that somebody had written on the walls. They wrote some things on the walls. So we only had six people in over the weekend. It was kind of a slow weekend. I started looking through the waivers, and I matched the handwriting on the waivers that they had signed to the graffiti.
Yeah.
And I went down to the place where the one guy works. And I introduced myself because I wasn't there. And hey, man, like, good to meet you and all this kind of stuff. Hey, listen, I got a little bit of a problem. So I came into work on Monday and I'm looking in my washroom and somebody's vandalized the wall of my washroom. And he's like, oh, dude. And I could see the look on his face. It was like, I didn't do it. And I said, and you know what? I went through the waivers and I compared the handwriting to, you know, the wall, and man, it looks like your handwriting. Like, I didn't fully come out and accuse the guy, but I said, look, it looks like your handwriting. And I mean, if you would have talked to me yesterday, I would have knocked his teeth out. Like, I was just livid. So he says, no, honest man, it wasn't me. I would never do that. I mean, you know, we've got a business here and it's just disrespectful. I wouldn't do that. I said, well, I really appreciate that. Thank you. I don't think that it was you. And I just kind of moved on and I said, you know, please come back sometime. And hey, I'm glad you guys enjoyed yourself. And I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't you, cause I thought that would be kind of weird. But how many people wouldn't call people out on their bullshit? And maybe he did do it, maybe he didn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. He knows that there is a certain level of fuck around and find out.
Yeah, exactly.
Because a lot of people wouldn't, a lot of people wouldn't go around and go to your place of business. And I mean, I wasn't aggressive with him or anything like that because I'm a big guy. I know that I can intimidate guys. Like, I'm 6'2" and I'm just a big man. So I didn't want to throw that around, but at the same time, I just didn't want people to know that, hey, you know, this is acceptable behavior. So I get to talk to the other guy tomorrow.
So is that your full-time job now?
Yeah.
What about you, Lando?
I work in research and development for a bus manufacturing company, major bus manufacturing. Mainly based off of my welding skills, fabrication skills. That's why I work there. But I also drive and I do some electrical as well. And I'm pretty savvy on the computer, so it tends to help me out a lot with my position as well. And then I got the side hustle with doing welding and blacksmithing on the side.
Right. So,
definitely not taking on life like you are, though.
I do everything. Like sometimes during the day, you'll find me just, you know, it depends on the day of the week, but I'll be sitting in the computer all day. And then, you know, another day I'll be doing electrical work. We'll be running cables. We'll be doing cameras. We'll be doing, you know, fans, Reese's lights, all the good stuff. So I do HVAC. I do plumbing. I did 10 years of property management for a big company. And I was a maintenance supervisor. So I got pool certified. I got HVAC certified. I got plumbing. You know, I got all the people skills. I got a lot of HR training. So I think that was the job that gave me the most. I did get fired from that job, and I always tell the story. I say it proudly, because most people, when they get fired, they don't want anybody to know. And I got fired from the job from having my businesses, because came to a point where I couldn't do it anymore. I was just all over the place. I was asking for too much time off. I had a 10 man crew already working full time, and I was still having a full time job. And it just brought me in, and you know, they said, "Hey, you still want your job, or either you stop doing what you're doing, or you lose your job." And I said, "Hey, thanks for the job, but I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing, you know." And I was there for a while. It was a good company, very strict. A lot of hours, 60-hour weeks. You know, I was flying to Ohio, Michigan, Arizona, El Paso. I was all over the place. We were doing due diligence, buying, selling properties. So I got most of my training from them, and I'm really grateful for that company. And I'm, you know, happy to say that I got fired for a good reason.
Oh yeah,
I'd say so. Yeah. I mean, you definitely took really the right approach.
Yeah, I love to. I'm a hands-on guy, so I hate being on the computer. I hate being on a desk. I really don't have a. I do have my dedicated office, but I'm there maybe 5 hours a week because I hate being in an office.
So how do you manage all of this stuff then, dude?
Well, for me, I don't know why, but for me, kind of simple. I hire like for each location that I have, I hire either a director or a manager. Then I go to the assistant manager. Like for payroll, I do payroll. Like I'm going to do payroll tonight. It's going to take me 15 minutes because I buy softwares where people can clock in and out. And then I do payroll through ADP. That's the biggest payroll company here in the United States. And I just, you know, transfer the hours from the software to ADP, and I run payroll, and it gets direct deposited every Friday. And you know, for me, I get the directors, the managers checking hours on Mondays. They got to approve them by Tuesday, and I do payroll on Wednesdays. You know, for me, it's kind of simple. I get on a phone. I'm mostly on the phone all day, so I get phone calls with them on daily, you know, how things are going. If shit hits the fan in a location here and there, I'll go take care of business, and or I'll guide them through over the phone, you know, just to what say and what not to say. Sometimes you just got to sit there and listen and look pretty. And sometimes you got to be the alpha and take charge and hire some people. I think it's, it was just, I did a lot at, you know, when, at an early age, and now it's something kind of simple for me. And I, you know, I do get in trouble. I do get lawsuits and all that stuff, but I don't get stressed. That's one thing. Like I'm going to go play Call of Duty till 3 a.m. tonight. You know, I love to play video games. Well, only Call of Duty. I play Warzone. I have a crew. I went and met these guys in Mexico because, you know, we've been playing for 2 years now. So we all got together. We have beers. I love gaming.
Take me through a day of your life, man. Like, what time are you waking up in the morning? Are you having breakfast first thing? Like, how's your day start, dude?
So I have one rule that I've been following for years. I don't eat until I earn my meals. You know, when I was homeless here in the United States and doing drugs and all that stuff, there was some days where I wouldn't eat for like 2-3 days, right? So I made up my mind where I wasn't going to put a piece of bacon in my mouth or breakfast until I did some actual work. So I never had breakfast. I always eat after I'm done answering emails, phone calls, or after I take care of business, go and fix the fence or whatever, one of the rentals, plumbing. So I always eat after I earn my meals. But, you know, I'm a night shift guy. So I like to work at night. You can find me awake till like 3:30, 4 in the morning. Like most guys always tell me, how come you're posting at 2 in the morning? If you would be posting like around 5, you'll get more interactions with your posts because everybody's asleep at that time. I said, well, that's where I'm completely awake. And I'm not a morning person. So I do get up 10, 11, sometimes at noon. And then that's when I start my day. So I get up because at that time, all of my employees have been to the office. They have been to work. They have already talked about all the problems. When I get up, I have all my email, my text messages ready for me. I'm not waiting for them to come in already. So, and then I start answering them in the order that I feel that they're more important to me. And then I'll be having breakfast like at 3 or 4 in the, you know, in the evening. So, and, you know, when I do have to get up early, like tomorrow, I have an architect coming over and I'm going to meet him there at 11. So I got to get up at, you know, 8 or 9. So I do get up early when I need to, but I'm not a morning person. I like to work at night.
I feel that, man. Everybody I work with likes to be at work early. Like they come in for 5 a.m. and I'm like, fuck me, man. I ain't getting up at 5 a.m. let alone being at work for 5 a.m. screw that. If I'm getting up that early, I got my own life I could focus on versus going into work if I really wanted to, man.
And, you know, I used to be a morning person because I had to. When I was working for that company with the property management, I was up by 5, and I used to do boxing too, so I used to go get on the treadmill and then go to work, and then I used to do some jump rope during lunchtime. I did that for 3 years, and it was just my knees went bad. My hands are bad now. My nose is crooked from getting punched all the time. So I figure being a night person, a night shift person, it just works for me. I'm more productive.
Yeah,
I feel that, brother. I'm definitely like that. Come the weekends, Friday night, I'm in the shop till 4 or 5 a.m. every weekend, guaranteed.
Yeah.
And I was up at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. that morning, generally.
Yeah. Hey, Nick, do you have a big shop?
Yes. Well, it's 2,000 square feet.
Wow. That's a big shop. That's nice. What about you?
It's not bad.
Lando?
What is it? I got 28 by 36, and then I've got an overhang on the back of it that I'm going to start to box in this summer, and that overhang is 16 by 38.
Wow, so that's nice.
I'm going to turn the overhang area into the actual blacksmithing area because it's got a dirt floor. So I'm starting to ruin my cement in my nice shop, and I'm going to turn that into the machine shop and keep my tractor in there and stuff like that. Yeah. What about you? How big is your shop, dude?
I have a 2-car garage, and it's full of vices. And then I have a huge yard that's full of vices. And every time I want to buy a shop, because I don't want to build one here because this house is already, it's going to be a rental just like every other house. Yeah. So everybody's like, and this house already paid for, and so I move in, I take care of them, and then, you know, either remodel them, pay for them, and then move to the next. And every time I want to buy a shop, a new property comes in, and then I get my eyes on it, and then I go to work, and then I forget about my shop. So this Friday, I'm going to be walking, I think it's a 40 by 35, feet, it's a big shop. So I'm going to be walking that this Friday. Hopefully I could put in an offer, if everything goes smooth.
Yeah, nice.
2-acre lot.
You strike me as a type of person that could buy a building downtown, have your own amazing penthouse on the top of the building, have the bottom place set up as your big shop and garage, and then have a bunch of rental units in between all of that, and just have your entire life set right under your feet, dude.
Maybe one day, but I do want a big shop so I can have a penthouse on top of it. So
that'd be so amazing.
Nice. Yeah. So
you,
soon,
dude, you know, those scraping. You see the pictures of these shops that are like massive, 2,000 square foot. You know, well, 4,000 square foot shops, and then on one end it's a luxury home. And
that's my gorgeous. my friend's Eric shops like that. He has three Rolls Royces on his garage. He has a Lamborghini. He has a Porsche convertible, Porsche classic one. He has a whole big vice collection, Amble collection, and he has a luxurious penthouse on top. It's amazing.
Who's that? He lives in
California. Eric Padilla.
Oh my God! Is he on Instagram or?
Yeah, he's on Instagram. He doesn't post really much. Everything he has, but he has an amazing collection.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
We talk to each other like every other day. He's great.
Have you found that the Anvil market, like we all know the Anvil market skyrocketed because of Forged in Fire.
No.
Have you found that it's either leveled off now or is starting to taper off, or do you find it still growing?
No, it's leveled off now. I remember a couple years ago when it was just going up, it kept going up, and then it got to the point where, and I see the same thing happening with vices. It gets to the point where all the guys that are going to spend the big bucks get what they want, and then it settles in for a while until the new generation comes in. So, and I think that's just like the stock market. Once there's a new company out there or new crypto, everybody jumps in. Once the big whales come in and they buy the majority of the stocks, it settles down until those whales start to sell again. And then, well, you know, like Andrew Alexander, he started selling now. So then the market kind of just settles because he's buying a big Amble, a 400 plus Amble collection now.
Holy fuck.
Yep. So he started to sell some of his other stuff that he's not really interested in, like, you know, a lot of regular vices, or he's selling some good vices too, but that's where the market's kind of settling now. It will go up again, but we got to wait for the new generation to come in and, you know, the new guys that are barely going to get started on collecting vices and spend all that money on it.
Are you the type of person that will look at an Anvil? Okay, so there's a conversation that's happening on Facebook right now, I think is where I saw it. And there's the group Anvils ran by Robin Sharples. Do you know who Robin is, I'm sure, right? From UK? So there's been a bunch of people complaining. There's a specific gentleman that owns an antique store that's been posting Anvils for absolutely ridiculous high prices, and people are complaining that they can't comment on his post because he's turned off commenting. Robin had a chat with the guy, said you can't do that, you need to allow commenting, and of course the comments are flooding this guy's post with these astronomical prices and this and that. And I gotta wonder what is it that this gentleman in specific, how is he basing his prices? Like, how are you taking a 120-pound anvil and asking over $1,000 for it? Like, where is the math on that? I have heard $10 a pound for anvils before. I've never personally seen that happen in where I am, that's for sure.
So yeah, I've seen a couple of cases like this with anvils and vices. And the reason why these guys do that, most of the time, it's because they get in trouble with the IRS. And the thing is, and that's a, you know, a lot of guys don't talk about this, but it's a common issue. I had a lot of collectors, they just start buying all these collections with their business accounts. And the thing is that they put them into the businesses, and I see that happening. I mean, I have not made that mistake because my CPA stopped me with the first bench buys that I bought for the business. It's like, wait, why are you paying $3,000 for this? And I said, oh, you know, it's worth that much. Okay, whatever. So I bought another one. She's like, that's not going to happen. You need to buy that from your personal account. When the IRS comes in, they're like, you're buying the same brand, same description stuff for the business. Anyways, it goes to the point where they need to start selling tools for what they said they bought them for. And a lot of these deals are cash deals. And they need a place to put all this stuff. So they need to have proof that they're out there selling the stuff. Another thing that happens is the wife gets mad. And they say, you better sell this stuff. And the guy said, look, I posted it online. It's for sale. It's just not selling. So I seen this. I seen so many different, same scenario things.
Exactly. I don't want her to hear this.
So, you know, it just depends. I know a guy, he's a freaking scammer on the buys world. He has a little collection of vices. Maybe he has like 40 vices, right? Decent vices, not great, decent. But he sells them for cheap online. I actually bought a couple from him. I never received them. He did send me my money back. But this is how he's becoming famous or known. That he sells vices, and all he does is post vices in every state or on eBay, on Craigslist, on the marketplace, that, hey, I have a $3,000 vice for $1,000. So, I'm going to message him. I'm going to send him a friend request. I'm going to talk to the guy. He'll never send me the vice. He'll be like, hey, I'm just going to return the money because I don't know how to do this. I can't get the money off of PayPal. And he's well known. He's been banned from a couple of our groups.
Huh, interesting.
But he gets all the new people that are coming in to talk with him, and he has like a bunch of followers too, just because he wants to be known out there. But he's just really a prick.
Well, there's a guy in our neck of the woods, about half an hour outside of where I'm living right now, that just recently posted. There's got to be about a dozen anvils that he's 10 to 12. I'm not sure how many for sure, but I saw there, and a lot of them are unique, like anvils, Austrian anvils, German anvils with the double horn pattern, and also like not your normal anvils, and the majority of them are like 300-pound plus. But he's also asking $3,000, essentially $10 a pound, and it's like, where is this guy coming from, man? No one around here is paying $10 a pound for an anvil. And then secondly, where the fuck did this guy get all these anvils from? Like, no one around here has anvils like that. He must have put in like a big order through Europe or brought in like a crate or something like that, is my guess.
And you know what? Another thing that I see now that you say that, a lot of these older guys, they don't know how to do social media.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to post their stuff. So they'll post them, and they'll post them for sale. And they'll just put a random number out there to get people's attention and to get a conversation going. But they really don't want to sell. And some of them do, that's my I don't want to sell it price. But if you want it, that's what it's going to cost you. You know how I posted the 10-inch mogul just a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
And I got maybe a dozen messages with random vices, like, hey, what would you give me for this? I'm like, dude, I'm not looking for that.
Right.
And then a couple of guys say, hey, I have 2 9-inch vices. Do you want them? I'm like, how the hell did you get 2? I've been doing this for years, paying top dollar, and I have 4. And then they send me pictures, and it's a 9-inch opening, not a 9-inch job.
9-inch opening.
You just run into all this different.
I'm somewhat guilty of that same problem because I messaged you and I was like, I've got a 109 read. And you're like, what? A 109? And I was like, wait a minute. We've had this conversation before. And I found out through talking to you, it's not a 109. It's a 108.
A 107. It was a 107.
I have a 108 as well.
Okay, you have a
107. The 107 is the one that I had 2 of, and I sold the one of them to my friend for $80.
Yeah. But see, that's a good example there, because a 108 – you could get a 108 for like $1,500 if you know, in a good day. But a 109, which is just 1-inch difference, it goes for like $5,000.
Holy fuck. Well, just the rarity, right?
Exactly, the rarity. Not because of the size or, oh, it's just 1 inch bigger, so it must be close to that. No, it's just because you're not going to find one.
Well, and this is kind of where I was going with the example of anvil prices. Is the price per pound the wrong way to be looking at anvils? And if it is the wrong way to be looking at anvils, what is the proper formula to be looking at anvils? I think this is a discussion that needs to start to happen in the blacksmithing world, as to what is the proper way to look at the value of an anvil. You know, I've come to learn personally myself, I'm not the biggest fan of Peter Wright anvils. They're good anvils, but to consider them like top shelf, I'm sorry, I don't consider Peter Wright top shelf anvils. I'm leaning more to Brooks anvils, solid cast anvils, versus something with a welded tool face, right?
What do you think, Nick? Which is a good anvil?
I have a Peter Wright.
Peter Wright?
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a Peter Wright too. I have a few of them, but Peter Wright's a good anvil, but like, you know, like Lando said, it's not, it's like most guys would say, oh, it's the best. So
no, I you know what, I'd like to have a Hey Button.
I was gonna say you get guys like Nick that say Hey Button's the best. Well, Hey Button's only the best because people have said that. It's really not.
Yeah.
And it's a sexy anvil. I have a Hey Button too, but personally I love German anvils.
Stroke me the right ways.
I have
2 550-pound German anvils, and they're amazing. The way they're built, the face, everything's just, I mean, I have a Hey Button too, but it's not even close to what a German anvil is.
Yeah.
I had a Swedish anvil, and it was a good anvil.
Swedish anvil?
Kolschwa?
It was another
brand that they do. I forget. Out of Sweden.
This one was for Burlington Forge. I mean, to forge, to make knives, I mean, even a block of steel is good.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing that I've learned, dude, is you want a good anvil, just get a chunk of tool steel.
Yeah, exactly. And but if you want like a collector's anvil or something that's going to get value over the years, get one of the known brands out there, like a Hey Button, you know, just a Peter Wright, Trenton, you know.
Trenton.
I love Trentons. They have a extremely long horn. You know, I have a couple of Trentons, and they're good anvils too. But if you want it just for the value, just get a name brand. That's what I learned.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And really, I mean, it's like anything. It's opinion. I like my Peter Wright.
Yeah.
You know, I know lots of people that like their Peter Wright.
Don't get me wrong. It still works as a great anvil.
The thing, like a Peter Wright that's 100 pounds is not going to be the same Peter Wright that's 250 pounds. You got to put in all these numbers and shapes to see what you're really talking about.
Yeah. But if you put a 200 pound Peter Wright next to a 200 pound Brooks, and you say, go use both of them and tell me which one you like at the end of the day, my money is going to be on the Brooks. I bet you that's the one you're going to tell me you like better.
Well, it could be, but you need to do that. You need to actually do that with a couple of guys.
I've done it personally myself because I've had a whole schwack load of different anvils come through. I haven't gotten to play a Hey Button yet. That's one anvil I haven't touched yet. But Ajax, Arm & Hammer, I can tell, dude. I can tell. the size of that fucking the heel on a Hey Button, dude, that's the last thing you want.
Yeah.
You look at the Brooks and look at how thick that heel is. You can wail on that heel and never have to worry about it breaking off on you. The second you start getting some delamination or cracking happening between the tool face.
I've seen too, like a lot of the guys don't know when you're first starting. I was guilty of that too. I didn't know how to use an anvil. So I wanted to do striking on a 100-pound anvil. A couple of them. And that was my mistake, you know. And now I have a striking anvil.
Yes,
now
sir.
600 pound anvil that I could do a lot of work with, and then I have a little 150 pound anvil that I could do shapes with, you know. When you're starting, you don't know these things. You just want to use the same anvil for everything.
I'm a huge proponent of the striking anvil, man. What do you have for a striking anvil?
Oh, me? I have a, I think it's a 300-pound block of a mild fuel, yeah, for a striking ammo.
Nothing serious.
With 4-inch legs filled with sand and oil. So it
there
is
you a, go.
It's a chunk of steel.
Nice. Did you make it yourself? Or?
Yeah, I put that, I put it together myself. Beautiful. I got that chunk of steel out of an auction, and they would use it to weigh down a forklift on the back.
Did you put a hardy hole on it? Or?
No, not on that one. I do have a smaller 200-pound plate, but it's 2-inch thick striking ammo with a hardy hole on it.
Beautiful, beautiful. That's hands down, the only tool I fucking need, as far as I'm concerned, is my striking. Well, you need a hammer and stuff too, but I don't need an anvil. I went to a hammer in on the weekend. I didn't take an anvil with me. I took my striking anvil. That's all I took. Mm-hmm. I took a bunch of bottom tools and top tools, but.
And it is what just gets you comfortable doing what you love or what you want to do. You know, you find the right tools and that's all you need.
Well, there's that. Everybody's going to have the tool that they lean towards versus somebody else. They'll be different on things, eh?
Yep.
We haven't mentioned anything about our sponsors. I don't know if you have ever heard of Maritime Knife Supply. MaritimeKnifeSupply.ca or .com somebody that backs us up, and you can get yourself 10% off if you buy 10 grinding belts. You'll get one for free. You can use the code FSCKILN on checkout and save yourself $100 on Even Heat or Paragon Kilns. And, dude, you go on his website and you find something you don't like, message Lawrence and tell him, hey, man, you should be carrying this item because I think it's a hot item for you to be carrying. Guess what he'll do? He'll probably start carrying it for you because he's that freaking awesome. And he ships to Canada and the United States real quick. That's MaritimeKnifeSupply.ca.
If you're in the United States, you've got that exchange rate benefit there.
I mean, bank off of that big time, buddy. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Really nice for our American listeners.
Yeah, man. And let's double down on this while we're at it. Go check out thetoilinseed.com and buy yourself some homegrown, right out of Saskatchewan, linseed oil. This man's putting the seed in the ground to create the flax flour. And then he takes that flax flour and the seed from that flax flour, presses it, gets some beautiful oil, processes that oil into some cans for you and sends it out across Canada, all across North America. Go check out thetwillerlindsay.com and use the code FORGECHAT10 on checkout to save yourself 10% on orders $50 or more. That's that.
There you go.
And don't forget, Great Lakes Custom Knife Show is coming up Saturday, August 19th. That's happening in Southern Ontario, Goodrich, Ontario. Great Lakes Knife Show on Instagram or Great Lakes Custom Knife Show. Great Lakes Custom Knife Show on Instagram or Great Lakes Custom Knife Show .com. If you want to follow along and see what's going on, this event is being sponsored by Maritime Knife Supply, and we'd love to see you there.
Are you going to have this episode out before then?
Before August 19th?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Oh,
better. Maybe not, considering. Yeah. I think I'm going to do a dump. I think I'm just going to dump like 3 episodes in one day, dude.
Hey, Nick, that'd be awesome. So do you do any Damascus knives?
Oh, yeah. 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 Actually, we did our first 2-day course yesterday and today. We made 50-layer Damascus, and then he forged out a massive Bowie knife with an integral bolster.
Wow.
And it turned out really good. We used Clara Walnut Burl for the handle.
Wow.
It's sexy.
That's going to be my next knife. I want to do Damascus now because it already takes days to, you know, weeks to make one. So might as well do Damascus.
Dude, you live near one of the greatest guys that ever made patterned Damascus.
Tell me about it. Pep.
Yeah. Pep Gomez. Jose Gomez.
Go hang out with him for a day and he will show you the freaking reins, dude, man. Holy shite. And he's such a good dude, man. He's so cool. He's part of the fucking part of a Baja race team, dude.
What's his Instagram?
Lost Arts Forge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is it?
Man, Lost Arts Forge.
Lost Arts. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I need to follow him
back. You know what?
I don't know who's.
Bring him a really nice bottle of tequila and you will be in.
Good. I need to pick him out for sure.
Yeah.
Look at us just drooling over our American counterpart here, right? We're supposed to be highlighting Canadians and talent in the Great White North, and we're just like, oh, you guys down in New Mexico.
Dude, correct me if I'm wrong. Is he not a master at pattern Damascus welding?
Sure is.
Patterns,
yeah.
Welding steel. I mean, he is a master. If you want to learn how to do incredible mosaic patterns, he is the guy.
He'll never claim to be a master, but
but you know what, you spend 10 minutes with the guy and he will transform your life. I mean,
he's
honestly
in Las Cruces, he's about 3 hours from me, so that's on my way to Juarez, so I'll definitely stop by.
Yeah, check,
there you go,
get in contact with him, because he has hammer-ins every once in a while and he gets like awesome people stopping by, dude. Yeah. Like, what was Will Stelter was just at his shop not that long ago.
Will keeps telling me he's gonna stop by, and then something comes along, and but he said he'll be here soon. So, you know, I talk to him often too. He needs to bring a couple of my bices that I got from him.
I got a question for you.
Yeah,
Jesus. Okay, 1960 Wilton 3-inch bullet vise. It's completely restored. What do you think that should be?
$400. Price?
The price?
It's a vice. Yeah. It's completely refinished all the way around. Golden bronze powder coat with black powder coated accent. Brass milled jaws. Brass nuts and stainless steel handles.
Oh, wow.
Works like new, but it's really
more of a collector's piece. $350, $400, $450 max. I mean, I really don't like restored vices. I prefer him to have, you know, the original patina on him.
Yeah.
He's got $900 Canadian.
Yeah. Holy shite, dude. I picked up a Wilton bullet that I don't think it's a 3-inch. I think it's a 4-inch. I got $400.
Yeah, no, that's way too much, especially it's a 3-inch. I mean, 3-inch, 4-inch, 1.5-inch. Those are like the most common ones.
Were you the one asking?
This guy fell in love with it because he's completely restored it.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of time and money put into it, dude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Most collectors don't want a painted vice.
Right.
The real collector.
Yeah.
We don't. I
agree.
The original paint. Or same bare metal.
Same thing with anvils. Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
You know, why would you put lipstick on a pig?
Well, if you're trying to sell it, right?
Depends on the pig.
Yeah,
it's like you have that rigid vice. I was browsing through your pictures and I saw the rigid vice that's painted orange. And as soon as I saw it was orange, I didn't even have to read that it was a rigid vice. I knew it right away.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
What about Irwin's? Are Irwin's all right?
No.
What the fuck is this? Who is this guy? There's a guy
on Facebook Marketplace looking at vices now. I mean, you sparked it.
There's a guy near me that's trying to sell a record. A record 545 or something like that. I've never heard of this, but it's a 6-inch record machinist vice. It doesn't look like it's anything much more than the normal record 6-inch vice, maybe a little bit bigger. The guy's asking $500 for it. Where are you coming from, bud?
I might have to go buy this vice.
It's very easy to mark up vices because if they see a vice like a, let's say a 107, right? A 107 still, a Reed 107, it's a 7-inch jaws, but it's still an $800 vice.
Okay.
And then they say, well, I have a 105, so I'm going to sell it for $700. And it doesn't work that way. It's just because a 7-inch is still a rare vice. But a lot of the guys are like, hey, I'm just going to put it up there for as close as that because it's a close size to what he just sold, but it doesn't work like that.
the leg vices, we spoke about it somewhat. I can't remember who I was speaking to about this recently. Maybe it was yourself. And the conversation came out that they're interested in 3-inch or smaller leg vices.
Hmm.
Because anything, once you get into smaller than 3-inch, now you're stepping into a world of leg vices that is extremely rare. I can't remember, maybe it was Alex.
Well, really? That's the thing. Most leg vices you're going to find, they're 4-inch or bigger.
Yep.
Yeah.
And for a blacksmith shop, the vise you want to use is a 4-inch to a 5-inch. Because the bigger they get, the harder they get to turn. And it's a pain in the butt with the long handles. Because I used it when I have hot metal. And it's just a pain to have a big vise. You can't do blacksmith with an 8-inch vise. It's just a pain in the butt. I mean, you got the big handle. The vise is not as smooth. It's a lot more turning. It just, I like the smaller leg vises for blacksmith.
As long as it's mounted well.
Yep, exactly.
What's your favorite way of seeing a leg vise mounted?
Well, bolted to the concrete if it's going to be a user.
Yeah.
Or with the concrete.
It just don't move.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I agree, especially, man.
Especially when you're hammering on it. I mean, and that's why the railroad stands, the buy stands that came out from the rail yards, that's why they're so sought after too and so expensive. I bought a couple of them for $5,000 each.
Holy smokes.
And I have five of them. And but just because they weigh over 700 pounds and they were originally made for 8-inch vices for the rail yards.
Yeah.
So you know, that's what their only purpose to have
I've considered making one because I've got a big chunk of 2-inch plate that I picked up through a farm for dirt cheap. And I thought to myself, man, how fucking cool would it be to just make what looks like a railroad vice stand to mount one of my vices? Did you see
my railroad stand built with a train wheel on YouTube?
No, because I haven't seen. I don't really watch a lot of YouTube, unfortunately, so I haven't seen that. But you did put a picture of it, didn't you?
Yeah, it's like 4-minute video. But I bought a train wheel with a train axle out of a junkyard here locally that my friend owns, and I made a railroad stand. And I put a Holland's 18 8-inch vise on top of it. That was my first railroad stand, and that's just to show you how much I wanted a railroad stand, a freaking original. I had to make my own, and now I have 5 originals, you know. But when I really wanted one, they were going for crazy money, and I just said, you know what, I'm gonna make one out of a train wheel, and it's 1,400 pounds altogether.
I may be following in your footsteps, sir.
So check out that video; you'll get some good ideas.
I think I will definitely. Actually,
there's a company that transports train axles here in Red Deer. Should see if they have any wheels that have fallen off.
There's a company that makes them here in Winnipeg.
Dude.
The foundry that makes train tires is here in Winnipeg, dude. I drive by it to work every fucking day. They're hiring, for fuck's sake. Okay, I could go work there.
Yeah.
Go get a defective one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What I have been trying to get my hands on is salvage train axles.
Oh, yeah.
So train axles are 6-inch solid round bar, 4140. You cannot get a better anvil for a tire hammer.
Wow.
And as scrap material, you're going to pay way less for that than you are buying brand new 6-inch round bar mild steel, for crying out loud. So it's the way to go. Yeah, man.
I'm gonna be sending Nick here a message so I can know who he is on Instagram, because I'm pretty bad with names.
Yeah.
I have I can't remember anything, so I have too much in my head.
Oof, I can't imagine why, dude. Jeez.
The wife tells me, she's like, I thought you play Call of Duty to get stress off, but it seems like you get more stress because you're just cursing and And I said, that's its own little world. That's a different world. That's me stepping into the Matrix. I said, you have no idea. I told her half of the day I'm thinking in my normal day, what upgrades I'm going to do for my gun, what scope I'm going to put in, what muscle break, I said, and different tactics. I said, and then the other half is all business. But I said, that's its own little world. So I don't have much space up here anymore.
Yeah, I just sent you a message on Instagram.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, my wife has this thing, and I just watched a Robert Greene video on it too about shutting down
his books.
Robert Greenfield? He's a Robert pretty, Green. Yeah, yeah. Is it Green or is it Greenfield? I don't know. He's an older gentleman, wears glasses. He's on Instagram a bunch, and he just had a little video he posted up about how it's good to shut your brain off if you're like if you're one of those types of people that you're just going all the time. It's good to along the lines of wasting time, not compulsive, I had just had the word in my head, being lazy essentially. And people like us, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be pulling myself into the same category as you, dude. I'm sorry. That was wrong because I'm so not like you. You're so much more driven than I am, I think. But I wish I was driven like you. And when I can think of myself being driven like you, this is where this comes from, is being in that mindset of being so driven that you get to a point where it's like, it's good to shut your brain off at the end of the night for a little while. And I have this, I've had this conversation with my wife. My wife runs a house cleaning business, and she is extremely busy with that. I know there's ways for her to mitigate it, so it's for it to be less work. She hasn't figured that out yet, or we haven't figured that out. Once we figured it out, chances are she'll move on to growing it or maybe buying another business, kind of like you're doing or whatever. But her thing is every night she's got to sit down, pulls the laptop out, and starts watching like murder mystery stuff or whatever, like all the psycho women do, right? Mm-hmm. But it's her way to shut her brain off, is what she says at the end of the night. I'm just like, I don't get it. Like I work until the second I go to bed, dude. Like I'm just go.
Yep, it works. I just started playing Warzone 2 years ago. Like I never played any video games in my life until 2 years ago, and that's because my son turned 12. And he always bugged me about getting him a PlayStation, right? I said, no, not until you're 12, because you got to learn all this stuff first. You got to learn how to hunt, how to weld, the name of the tools. And then if you start early with video games, I feel like you're going to fill your brain with video games and not with the right stuff. I got him one, and he started teaching me little, here and there. I used to walk in his room. He used to be screaming, shouting, cussing. And then I said, hey, I like that. It's interesting. And I got one for myself, and it's just one of those things. I'll play every day, but I 3 days a week, till 3-4 in the morning, I'll be with my team, and we have I have a whole team now that we talk like on the daily, and and I'm telling you from experience, it's a disconnect from the real world. Like it's just, you just go into the matrix and you just have no brain or thoughts for anything else than that.
Yeah, right.
It's just like you're in a different world, and you got to focus on that, or it just disconnects you from your everyday.
Oh, I kind of feel like artistic blacksmithing has done that for me. I feel like when I get into the artistic blacksmithing mode, that the rest of the world just kind of disappears. No, to me.
And I know exactly what you mean, because if I'm not doing that, I'm in the shop. I mean, you guys see my stories. I'm always trying to do something. It's just like I told most people, I'm not going to be posting on my, about businesses, stuff like that, because nobody cares. I post what I like about, the vices and little stuff that I'm doing. Sometimes I'll just post stories from days before that I forgot to post. But most of the time, if I'm not working out or playing video games, I'll be in the shop working on vices.
Cool. There you go.
What about you, Nick? What's your disconnect? What's your strategy?
Good question.
You drink.
Yeah.
You do drugs. Something.
Yeah, I do.
He's been hitting the vape pen and drinking the whole time.
Nice.
Well, we are in Canada, you know, this is just, yeah. We don't really, it's like you don't have a choice when you live up here.
Oh. Yeah, it's what we do to cope with our government. That's all.
Yeah.
sorry, that was political. That was 100% political.
Yep, exactly. So, any sports?
Yeah.
You guys watch any sports?
You know, actually, no, I'm not into that, but I'd like to go out to the range and do some, nice. Some long distance shooting.
You spiked my interest. So. You're hunting? You said you're teaching your son how to hunt, right?
I did. I used to go hunting back a few years ago. I got into guns a lot, so I have a few guns. You know, just like basics. I have an AR, an AK, a shotgun, a .22, a .45.
Just the basics. Yeah, everybody's got an AK hidden in their closet, right?
You just listed a few guns that we just can't have.
We're just
have those.
Nope.
No ARs, no AKs.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we can't buy or sell or trade handguns anymore.
Oh wow.
There's a complete freeze on handguns now.
Oh too. Wow. So that's crazy.
Yeah. So I bought two the day they announced that.
You have to. I used to go shooting a lot and then after that we went into boxing. So that was my disconnect. Yeah. But it takes a beating on your body bad. And I love it, you know. Hopefully when I'm done with this property I'm working on, I'll go back to boxing again a couple 2 days out of the week and get a little bit better in shape. But I don't watch any sports. I never watch any baseball, football, nothing in my life, just boxing.
Yeah.
I feel there that, man. I was huge into snowboarding in my younger years, and that was pretty much the only sport that I ever really bothered to watch was snowboarding and skateboarding stuff. And but I there's a part of me that regrets it.
Yeah.
Well, my body is fucked up, dude. Well, I was so into it that me and my buddies were going out with cameras and filming what we were doing on our snowboards, right? Trying to be like the pros or whatever. And at one point, I had a sponsorship with a company making some snowboarding. It was called the Banshee Bungee. It was like this giant rubber band that guys would use. They would get a crew of guys. They would pull it back because in Winnipeg, we don't have hills, dude. It's flat as fuck here, man. So we had no choice but use this thing called the Banshee Bungee. Yeah. And they sponsored me, man. They sent me a couple of them for free. And we made a few videos for them. And but that was like the height of my snowboarding. And I look back on that with a lot of regret because my body's fucked now. It sucks. Mm. I have such a hard time with a lot of things because of it. And my blacksmithing suffers because of it. But
I, you know what? I got into MMA a little bit.
Wow.
And then that was really the only sport that I followed at all. And then I've even stopped that now. I mean, I'm too busy.
And you have the right weight and height for that too.
Well, you didn't actually like fight though, did you?
No, I never fought.
Just watched it.
Well, I used to bounce when I was in my younger years. Yeah, so I've been in enough fights, but yeah, I'm kind of a dick, eh?
That's where it comes from. I rolled jiu-jitsu before jiu-jitsu was fucking well known. Me and my buddy used to watch Pride videos when we were younger and then go and roll at the gym because there was nowhere to like practice jiu-jitsu that we knew of. So freaking used to love that.
Nice.
Yeah. I think, you know, we're running up to almost a 2 hour mark here, man. We've touched on a lot of amazing topics here, dude. And I want to keep going, but at the same time, it's getting pretty late here and I know Nick's got to be up early in the morning there. So,
well, I'm one of those crazy people it's up at 5 a.m. every morning.
You're crazy people.
You're psycho.
Yeah. Good. That's healthy.
No alarm or anything. I just, it's 5 o'clock. I'm awake.
I'm cheering towards that, you know, in a few years from now, because I kind of think change is good too, you know, so I might go back.
You're psycho.
Yeah. I don't know. I find that with you wake up early and you start your day.
Yeah.
And then, you know, usually by 6 or 7 o'clock at night, you're asleep in your chair, but whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
awesome.
That's how I roll.
I don't have that option, dude. That's my issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna hit you up on on some prices on vices and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Now you've got me peaked. Yeah. Now I'm looking at different vices.
And you don't, you know, you might be full, but I got a couple of them that are 2-inch vices. They're, you know, you can pull them in your hand, and they're a couple $1,000.
Yeah. Really?
Oh my god!
I have one.
Yeah, really.
But it's a 91. It's a Parker. I can show you guys here in a little bit. But that vice is going for $4,000 now.
Hey, fuck!
And it's a handheld vice. I mean, it's so small.
Crazy.
What were those cast bears that you had at the beginning of the podcast?
Oh, here it is. It's a Parker bear. They were made from the Parker Vice Company. So they're cast iron. And the myth or the what we know is that they were given to you when you purchase a catalog from them. So like if you were a store or retail.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And gotcha. I currently hold the biggest collection in, you know, known out there, which.
Holy cow.
Yeah, which I have like 45 of them.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And crazy. I mean, they're going crazy. The market for them is, and it's my fault. You know, that's what everybody tells me. You post those a lot. And, you know, I'm sure if somebody sees this podcast, they're going to go look for one. And everybody's going to want to get their hands on one when one pops up. And, you know, last one sold last week for $700.
Not something I'm familiar with, dude. That's for sure. You've definitely spiked my interest there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got in early. I started getting those bears when I got a few of them, like $150, you know, a few years ago. But, you know, right. I did pay up for a few of them, too. So,
Sometimes it's worth it. Sometimes it's worth it, eh?
Well, quick question before we finish here. What's your daily carry knife, Nick?
My daily carry knife. I have just a buck folding knife.
Hmm.
That's just what I put in my pocket. I mean,
it's,
you know what, up until last year, like we go hunting every year. And up until last year, I never carried a knife that I made.
Yeah, that's why I was asking. Year, I was curious if you made one that you carry.
And then last year I made a W2 knife with Desert Rosewood handles, and it was it was really nice. And a little bit of a moan, and so I started packing that. And last year we shot a moose, and we skinned the moose. Actually, we skinned 3 moose and a deer. I hunt with old guys, so we get to do the skinning. And it held its edge for the entire time we were up there. So I was pretty happy with that. Moose hair, and you probably haven't hunted moose. There's not a whole lot of moose in
not once.
Man, they are. It's a surreal feeling.
Wow.
When you pull the trigger on one of those, it's like
you
don't understand how big they are until you are next to it.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. And their hide is just, it is so tough, and it is known for making knives dull. So I was pretty happy with that.
Good.
Yeah.
What about you, Londo? What's your daily carry?
It's time to go, guys. I'll talk to you later. Oh, I carry it depends. It varies in length from about on a cold day we'll say maybe 3 if I'm lucky. On a good day she's about 6.5, and you know, it's I consider it a bit of a dagger. It's
it's double edged. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Wait. Are you guys allowed to carry over there a knife? What's the deal?
We're allowed to carry knives. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if like there's a size limit where it becomes illegal there? I think it's like over 6 inches or something like that. You can't conceal it or something.
12 inches.
Is that what it is? 12-inch blade length. Yeah, but you I'm pretty sure you're legally allowed to ride around with a fucking katana on your back in Canada if you want to.
Yeah.
You know, funny story. funny story. When I was living in Calgary, there was a guy that decided to face off with the police with a katana about a block away from my house.
That's
yeah,
brilliant.
It didn't work out so well.
For yeah, him. I'm sure it didn't. Yeah. No, oh, that's
passed,
good.
Passed away from lead poisoning.
I am unfortunately not a huge knife guy. I made what I would consider my first knife not that long ago with a friend of mine, Rainy Day Forge, Justin Lamoureux. He used to help co-host the podcast. We started this together, and he's moved on to trying to run his business as a full-time gig there. So it's kind of, he's full force into that or whatever. And but I went and spent a day with him and made a chef knife. I've got it right here. I'll show it to you right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
You bought that from Walmart.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, getting that from Walmart, bud. That was 1084 and just straight 1084 stock removal. And I got some oil on it right now to help prevent it from rusting at all or whatever. But I have used it a couple times now. Yeah, it's very nice. And I've put a little bit of a thumb groove in the handle there. I don't know if you can really tell. Yeah, right there. You can see it.
Day. See that. That's yeah, right. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this last pin in the back here, I don't know if you can see, but it's a hollow pin. I actually used tent peg for that last pin. It's kind of like my own personal touch.
Yeah, and that's why I asked, because my goal, you know, it's to make my own daily user or daily carry knife.
Yeah.
Damascus, and I want something like a foldable. This is what I carry.
Yeah.
Chavez knife, full titanium. And I had this for a couple of years, and I use it every day. But my goal is just to make my own Damascus daily carry, and that's it. That's pretty much. I don't want to have like a whole collection of knives, but I want to learn enough that I could make a good user.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Here's a question for you. If you wanted to pick a knife, a specific knife that you didn't make, who would you want that knife from?
There's so many good knife makers out there. I mean, from the ones that I can think of top of my head, I mean, I'm probably going to have Will make me one. Will Starr.
Nice.
And that's because I talked to that guy, and he's a professional. So that would be the one for me. What about you?
I would be very hard-pressed to pick between a Mareko knife, because I've absolutely loved his work for a very long time. But after a chat with Pep Gomez, I'm like, holy fuck. I kind of want a Pep Gomez knife, dude. What about yourself, Nick?
Pep Gomez. Man, so there was a maker out there, and I'm probably getting my name wrong. He specializes in folding knives. I think, let me just look on Instagram here. Yeah. Donovan Johnson, Space Monkey Knives. Yeah. Yeah. He's in Maple Ridge. He does a lot of folders, and, Fordside Chat follows him. So there we go.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to check out his knives. He makes some really cool folding knives. Yeah,
I kind of feel bad that I didn't throw. What was the name?
Nick, again? Can you send that to me on Instagram?
Yeah.
Okay.
Space Monkey Knives.
Yeah. What is it?
How do you
send it?
Space Monkey Knives.
Yeah, I'm just gonna screen cap.
Okay, that works. Whatever.
I'm gonna screen cap it and then just message it to you. Yeah.
You can share the profile if you go up to the three dots at the top of the profile.
Well, let me do that.
Yeah, you can just send it as a message to somebody.
Let's see.
For anybody that's wondering, if you look at my Instagram and the amount of people I'm following on as Abstract Blacksmith versus the amount of people I'm following as Forgeside Chat, I try not to follow a lot of the knife guys on Abstract Blacksmith, because my Abstract Blacksmith account, I want to be able to see a lot of artistic blacksmithing. That's why I've got that account. Yeah. Whereas Forge Side Chat, I'm like, let me see your knives. I want to see the knives, guys. Bring it on. So there's a reason why Forge Side Chat is following a lot more people, because I follow everybody I'm following on Abstract Blacksmith. I'm also following on Forge Side Chat, but I'm also following a lot of extra people on Forge Side Chat that I'm not following on Abstract Blacksmith. And then there's also the account that I've got, the Canadian Blacksmith Collective, where I'm trying to follow anybody and everybody that's involved in blacksmithing that's on the Canadian forefront of it.
There you go. Yeah. So,
well, I'm Mixer Shop One and I only have that account.
It's all you need, dude. It's all you need. And you're on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
What's your YouTube channel?
Mixer Shop One.
There you go.
Same on Pinterest, Mixer Shop One. Same on Call of Duty. I'm Mixer Shop One. Nice. Pretty much everything. Yeah. My email, MixerShop1@gmail.com.
Right on, buddy.
There you go. Yeah. Keep it simple.
Well, on that note,
coo 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 coo
good day.
Good day. That is a Canadian thing, my friend.
Yeah. If you dive back into Canadian comedy from the 80s, there is two gentlemen. You probably heard the name Rick Moranis before. He's a fairly well-known celebrity.
Dave Thomas.
Dave Thomas, not so well-known, but the two of them ran a side skit on a comedy channel called SCTV. And they opened and closed out their skit with Kurukuku. It was they coined it, and it was a huge thing in Canada. There was parades where guys were cheering Kurukuku, and everybody would have takeoff hoser written on the side of their car and shit like that, right? So it was big. It was big at one point. Actually, I even got a book about it.
yeah, you do. Nice. There was a movie called Strange Brew that was all about Doug and Bob McKenzie. You'll have to look it up. It's it's quite stupid. You'll enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I got a question.
Yeah.
Aaron, E-R-O-N, are those good vices?
Aaron, they're England vices.
Yeah?
They're good vices.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, they're good vices.
Brand I haven't even heard of
Aaron
before.
Number one or number 100 for $35.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I might have to go get that.
Go get it.
Now you're gonna run into the same problem as me. Oh my god, I gotta buy it. Why? Why do I have to buy this? But I got it. I gotta do it.
And then you start lying to yourself. Well, I'm gonna sell that one I have on the shelf. So
is that how it goes? Shit, I'm there.
And then you don't want to sell it because then you won't have a full shelf full of vices. So,
hence the regret of me selling that Reed I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. I think it was a Reed 204, I think.
Oh. Yeah, Reeds are one of the best ones. Wilton, Reed, Parker, Rock Island.
No, wait. The Reed 204 is the small one I've got. It wasn't 204. I've got a bunch of Reeds. Reeds were the ones that I was like, oh man, these are cool. I really like these vices. So I've been trying to grow my Reed collection. Just picked up a Chicago Prentice vice the other day.
Prentice vice.
That was my first.
Are you sure it's a Chicago Prentice? I don't think it's Chicago Prentice.
I thought it said Chicago Prentice on it. I don't know. But it says Prentice on it. I know that for sure. But I thought it said Chicago too.
Prentice. Yeah, not Chicago then.
No, okay. Is that another brand? Is Chicago another brand?
So normally, Prentice will say New York, or I got a few of them here. Colombian will say Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes.
So it just depends where they made them.
Okay. I wonder.
Yeah,
I can find it really quick here and tell you, because I swear to God, it's Chicago. Prentice.
Let me go get that little one I was telling you guys real quick.
Morgan Chicago.
Morgan, yep.
I just found a Aaron number 125 as well. So I'm going to buy that. Now I'm buying vices.
How big is a 100?
So
they said it was 4-inch.
This is a that Parker. Is a cool vice, dude.
Well, that's a Parker, same brand as a Bear, right? And it's a 91. And look at the way it works. It's a quick release.
Yeah.
You pull up the lever. And
dude, that is so cool.
And this is that $4,000 vice I was telling you about.
Do they make a big version of that?
They do. They do wood double bass.
So cool.
But this is like one of the hardest ones to get out of this house. Yeah.
I can imagine. So
yeah. But yeah, there's just so many of them. You'll never finish. Trust me, I know.
I believe you, bro. If anybody knows, you know.
Same as the Ambles. It's a never ending story. Yeah. You know, like the little hay buns that go for like $5,000.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah. Who knows why? I don't know, but that's what people are paying for them. So.
I know. I don't get it either.
Yeah. I think one of them sold for like $7,000 on eBay.
Yep. Yep.
And it was a 10 pounder or 12 pounder. I don't
know. 10 pounder. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Yep. Yeah. Well, man. It was an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I am very, very enthralled by your story. I would love to meet you one day. Maybe. I was going to say maybe one of these days you should travel up to Canada and come moose hunting, bro.
I know, right? Yeah. With Nick over here.
Yeah, hey, man.
Try out his knife.
You bet. Yeah.
Take a knife making class.
Exactly.
Our classes are pretty fun. We'd like to have fun.
Yeah, I'm just coming for the food.
And
I know, right?
Yeah, we did smoked ribs for lunch today.
Looks so good.
Isn't that awesome?
Nice. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I'm living the life.
My wife spoils that.
Oh yeah.
Oh, my wife spoils me.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got homemade tortillas today too. So
I know what's going. That fucking pizza pops. Fuck you guys.
Dude. That is it.
That's right why you're skinny, bro. That's why we're fat.
Maybe. Yeah. All right, guys.
I'm just big boned.
Big boned. That's it.
That's it. Right on.
I love it, bro. I love that.
It was awesome talking with you, Jesus. Yeah. Awesome talking with you.
All right. Same here, guys. So it's a pleasure. And stay in touch. Stay in touch.
Yeah, I'll be hitting you up for vice prices.
Well, holy. Dang it, we forgot to do a music once again. I've been listening to a song called Classics of Love by Common Rider, same singer from Operation Ivy. Absolutely amazing punk music. Check it out if you're into that kind of stuff. I reached out to Nick, and this is what he had to say.
Hey, Lando. Thanks for asking what I've been listening to in the shop. Little River Band, Reminiscing. That's what we've been playing through the old Ryobi speaker.
And I also reached out to Jesus at Mexa Shop to find out what he's been listening to, and he came back to me with this.
Oh, well, one of my favorite songs is November Rain, brother. I would say that's a classic for me. One of the ones that I enjoy listening to when I want to relax in the shop.
That's the music for this week. I know we're behind on getting the playlist updated on YouTube. I'll get around to that as I get around to uploading some more episodes. I've got a few that are in the bank right now that I'll be uploading soon. Thank you very much for sticking with the show and staying tuned, and I hope you're looking forward to more. Until then, good day.